Today's broadcast was originally recorded on October 1st, 2024.
Events like this are being held in every battleground state across the country to recruit thousands of volunteers, all coordinated by the Republican Party, they say to protect against any potential voter fraud.
Cool. Are Democrats and everyone else doing the same?
Well, I don't know why I came here tonight.
I hope so.
I got the feeling that something ain't right. I'm so scared in case I fall off my chair. And I'm wondering how I'll get down the stairs. Clowns to the left of me, jokers to the right. Here I am, stuck in the middle with you.
Yep. From Pacifica Radio in Los Angeles, this is the Bradcast, as heard on KPFK 90.7 FM in LA. Also in California, in Red Bluff and Redding on KFOI and Round Mountains, KKRN. Up in Oregon on the Central Coast on KYAQ, Cottage Grove's KSO, and Eugene's KEPW. Lanchester, Pennsylvania's W News, Maui, Hawaii's KAKU. In Columbus, Ohio on WGRN, Palinville, New York's WLPP, and Rochester, New York's WRFZ. Down in New Orleans on WHIV, out in Gallup, New Mexico on KNIZ, Concord, New Hampshire's WNHN, Fayetteville, Arkansas's KPSQ, in Seattle on KODX, Richmond, Virginia's WRWK, Fairmont, West Virginia's WEFR, Janesville, Wisconsin's WADR, and Minneapolis, St. Paul's AM 950 KTNF. We also stream coast to coast and around the globe every day on the internet on the Progressive Voices channel, Netroots Radio, Radio for Humans, NicoleSandler.com, Radio Free Brooklyn, No Lies Radio, Detour Talk, and most of your favorite podcast sites. Blanketing Planet Earth, I'm Brad Friedman. Your friendly investigative blogger, journalist, troublemaker, muckraker, and all-around swell fellow says me from bradblog.com. Thank you very much for joining us today on the Bradcast. We've got a few items of breaking news, more continuing coverage of Hurricane Helene's disastrous and tragic and, Desi Doyen, perfectly predictable. Is that fair to say?
Sadly, yes. That was predictable, predictable as far as the intensity. And it was predicted, but unfortunately, there's not a lot you can do to prepare for something as egregious as that.
More on that fallout across a whole bunch of states in the U.S. Southeast this week, including in North Carolina, where crews are still searching for survivors. We will have more on all of that in our Green News Report later this hour, and I will be joined by a guest momentarily to discuss what else you can do to help protect our elections and our democracy this year, above and beyond making sure that you are registered to vote, as you think you are, before voting this year, and helping everyone you know to do the same. But there's also stuff that you can do on Election Day and after Election Day to help protect our democracy and ensure fair and accurately tabulated elections. My friend Emily Levy of Scrutineers.org will join us momentarily to discuss that. But up first, as noted, a few breaking news stories of note today. Iran launched at least 180 missiles into Israel on Tuesday, and what is the latest in a series of escalating attacks in a years-long conflict between Israel and Iran and its Arab allies that threatens now to push the Middle East closer to a region-wide war. Missiles were seen streaking across Israel's night sky as air raid sirens sounded and millions of residents scrambled into bomb shelters. Israel vowed retaliation for the attack, which it said had caused only a few injuries. Late today, Israeli Prime Minister Netanyahu says Iran, quote, made a big mistake and, quote, will pay for launching a missile attack on the country. Before Iran's attack, Israel had landed a series of devastating blows in recent weeks against the leadership of Iran-backed Hezbollah in Lebanon, including killing its top leader and several leaders of Hezbollah's second-tier leadership. It then ratcheted up the pressure on the militant group, which has been firing rockets into Israel's north since October 8th of last year, the day after the horrific cross-border Hamas raid into Israel from Gaza, by launching what Israel has described as a limited ground incursion in southern Lebanon. Some 80,000 Israelis have been evacuated from Israel's border with Lebanon since the attacks from Hezbollah began last year. They remain evacuated. Israel has said it will continue to strike Hezbollah until it is safe for citizens displaced from their homes near the Lebanon border to return. Hezbollah has vowed to keep firing rockets into Israel, however, until there is a ceasefire in Gaza with Hamas, which is also supported by Iran. An Israeli military spokesman said the country's air defenses intercepted many of the incoming missiles, though some did land in central and southern Israel. He vowed, quote, this strike will have consequences, and said the attack had caused only, quote, very few injuries, but he did not elaborate. Israel and Iran have fought a shadow war for years, but rarely do they come into direct conflict. Israel considers Iran to be its greatest foe, citing Iran's repeated calls for Israel's destruction, its support for Arab militant groups, and its nuclear program. Iran denies Israeli accusations that it is developing a nuclear weapon. In the U.S., White House National Security Advisor Jake Sullivan called Iran's missile attack a, quote, significant escalation, unquote, though he said it was ultimately, quote, defeated and ineffective, unquote, in part because of assistance from the U.S. military in shooting down some of those inbound missiles. We will, of course, like the rest of the world right now, be keeping our eyes on that, the likelihood of reprisal from Israel and a potential full-scale invasion of Lebanon, which could come rekindling a similar war between Israel and Hezbollah that supposedly ended back in 2006-2007. Here at home, and also likely to have unpredictable effects on this year's presidential election, now just weeks away, with voting already underway in a number of states, dock workers at ports from Maine to Texas began walking picket lines just after midnight on Tuesday morning in a strike over wages and automation that could reignite inflation and cause shortages of goods if it goes on for more than a few weeks, according to experts. The contract between the ports and about 45,000 members of the International Longshoremen's Association, or ILA, expired at midnight, and even though progress was reported on Monday in the talks, the workers went on strike, affecting some 36 ports. It's the first strike by this union since 1977, almost 50 years. Local ILA president Boyce Butler said workers want a fair contract that does not allow automation of their jobs. Shipping companies made billions during the pandemic by charging high prices, he said, adding, quote, now we want them to pay back. They're going to pay back. Butler insisted. He said the union will strike for as long as it needs to get a fair deal. And they contend that they have leverage over the companies, pointing to the union's importance to the nation's economy. The U.S. Maritime Alliance, which represents the ports, said on Monday evening that both sides had moved off of their previous wage offers, but still no deal was reached. The union's opening offer in the talks was for a 77% pay raise over the six-year life of the contract, with the union's president, Harold Daggett, saying it's necessary to make up for inflation and years of very small raises. Monday evening, the alliance said it had increased its offer to 50% raises over 6 years and a pledge to keep limits on automation. The union, however, is demanding a complete ban on automation at the ports. It wasn't clear just how far apart both sides are as of Tuesday afternoon. Quote, we are prepared to fight as long as necessary to stay on strike for whatever period of time it takes to get the wages and protections against automation that our ILA members deserve, said Daggett in a statement. They must now meet our demands for this strike to end. Supply chain experts say that consumers won't see an immediate impact from the strike because most retailers stocked up on goods in advance, moving ahead shipments of holiday gift items, for example. However, if it goes on for more than a few weeks, a work stoppage could significantly snarl the nation's supply chains again, potentially leading to higher prices and delays in goods reaching households and businesses. The strike will likely have an almost immediate impact on supplies of perishable imports, however, things like bananas. The ports affected by the strike apparently handle 3.8 million metric tons of bananas each year, or 75% of the nation's supply, according to the American Farm Bureau Federation. J.P. Morgan estimates that a strike that shuts down East and Gulf Coast ports could cost the economy anywhere from $3.8 billion to $4.5 billion per day. Some of that recovered over time after normal operations resume, whenever that may be. Of course, the strike comes just weeks before the presidential election and could become a factor if there are shortages in stores. A White House official said on Monday that at President Biden's direction, the administration has been in regular communication with the ILA and the alliance in order to keep negotiations moving forward, urging both parties to resolve the dispute fairly and quickly in a way that accounts for the success of shipping companies in recent years and contributions of union workers. As promised on yesterday's program, we will be keeping our eyes on the elections processes in the hardest hit regions of the U.S. Southeast in the wake of Hurricane Helene this past week. We focused predominantly in our coverage yesterday on the battleground state of North Carolina, which was hit very hard. Shortly after air, state election officials in North Carolina began announcing guidance to voters after Hurricane Helene devastated several counties in the western part of the state. With absentee voting already underway in the state, but cell service and internet service still down in a number of areas, the State Board of Elections said that counties without internet service will receive emergency kits that the State Board of Elections is calling election offices in a box. Apparently, this to help local offices register voters and process absentee ballots until service is restored. Sounds like these plans smartly were made in advance. I hope that's the case, and I hope this will help out in some of those areas. As noted on yesterday's show, voters in counties that are under a state or federal natural disaster declaration also will be exempted from North Carolina's voter ID requirements. Those displaced by the storm can request an absentee ballot at their temporary home, although the board did acknowledge that mail delivery is suspended at dozens of post offices right now in the hardest hit regions. More information is available and will continue to be available at the North Carolina State Board of Elections website, which is ncsbe.gov. And since many folks in the region still do not have full internet services to reach that site, if you know anyone in the state, you might want to let them know about that resource once they are back on their feet. Once again, that's NC for North Carolina, ncsbe.gov. Voters will have to be proactive about ensuring that they get ballots in many of the affected areas over the coming weeks. But that's also true really everywhere. Nonetheless, hopefully folks in those affected states, including North Carolina, South Carolina, Georgia, Alabama, Tennessee, and Florida, hopefully folks there will be able to help each other to vote and carry out successful elections this year. But in fact, as I said, that's going to be true everywhere this year as elections come down to public participation in more ways than simply voting. No matter where you live, there are ways to help ensure successful, fair, and accurately reported election tallies this year. Let me take a quick break here, and we will come back with one of the nation's leaders in helping folks to do exactly that again this year, along with the reminder that these are our elections, and we the people need to work, not just to vote and to have our favorite candidates win, but to protect the democratic process for everyone. Emily Levy joins me next in the broadcast with help on doing exactly that. I'm Brad Friedman, and you are listening to the broadcast.
The broadcast and the Green News Report are 100% independent, 100% listener supported. But we can't do it alone. We need you. Please help us bring real facts to listeners at independent stations around the nation. Please drop by bradblog.com/donate. That's bradblog.com/donate. And thanks.
Hey, this is Brad. You're listening to an encore presentation of the broadcast.
Watching me. I always feel like somebody's watching me, and I have no props.
Well, good. If you're an election, I hope someone is watching you. Welcome back to the broadcast. Brad Friedman from bradblog.com. The Republican National Committee and the Donald Trump campaign, which are now, for all intents and purposes, one and the same, have been claiming in the lead up to Election Day that they have and are still recruiting tens of thousands of volunteers to serve as poll workers and poll watchers across the country on November 5th. There are, of course, many Democrats kind of freaked out about that idea, largely because they seem to see the effort to place MAGA types into voting precincts as an attempt to intimidate voters at the polls on Election Day. Now, any form of voter intimidation is abhorrent and, by the way, it is unlawful. I can only hope that election officials and law enforcement officials handle such instances appropriately. But short of that, short of blatant voter intimidation at the polls, the idea that Republicans may be observing at those polls and at tabulation centers during the vote count after the close of polls is actually just fine by me. In fact, I think it's actually a very good idea. Well, Donald Trump has spent the bulk of the last 4 years lying to his own voters about massive fraud in the 2020 election. Neither he nor his duped supporters have actually been able to produce any actual legitimate evidence from any state of such fraud. Nonetheless, polls find that while the vast majority of Americans still believe the 2020 election was conducted fairly and that Joe Biden was indeed the legitimate winner, those same polls do show that a huge percentage of Republican voters believe that there was massive fraud that cost Donald Trump the election. The numbers in those polls vary, but they tend to suggest that around 2/3 of Republican voters have been convinced by Trump's blatant lies about fraud by Democrats in the 2020 election. But what I have found, for what it's worth, over my 20 years or so of covering elections, is that the only way to both keep them safe from fraud and to assure that the electorate has confidence in the results is for there to be public oversight of both the voting and the counting. The more transparency of such processes, the better for confidence in the system. That's just one of the reasons why, for so many years, I have railed against things like touchscreen voting systems, which make the process of both casting and recording votes and counting votes completely unverifiable after the close of polls. And it's why I've supported things like hand-marked paper ballots and even hand-counting of those ballots as needed to assure that computer tally systems like optical scanners have actually tallied the results as per the voter's intent. other than the ability to cast a secret ballot, the rest of the electoral process, the rest of the system should be open and overseeable by the public. And I find that when people take the time to actually oversee the system, be it as a poll worker or an election observer, they tend to come away with actually more confidence in the system. I believe that is true. In fact, no matter what party you might identify with or which candidates you support or oppose, that's one of the reasons why I think it's just fine that Republicans are pushing to sign folks up as poll workers and poll observers. Our electoral system is not based on trust or faith in the process. It is based on transparency, checks and balances, and public oversight. So no, I don't have a real problem with the Republican Party recruiting folks to oversee polling places and tabulation, though I do hope that Democrats and Green Party folks and Libertarians and independent voters are all smart enough to do the same thing. The more eyes, the better. During voting, and arguably as importantly, if not more so, during the counting process that takes place from the minute that the polls are closed until the elections are formally certified at the local, state, and in the case of presidential elections, federal level. But it's not only party-affiliated folks who have a responsibility, as I see it, to oversee our elections. If I were me, I wouldn't trust any particular political party to oversee the elections. I prefer to do it myself when I can, and there are many ways to do so. I've asked listeners over the years on the broadcast and readers at bradblog.com for many years now to take whatever action they can on election day and night, and now, of course, in early voting, as well as during the tabulation period. I've asked folks to serve as poll workers and observers, whether with a party or simply as a member of the public, as many of the election and tabulation processes are, in fact, open to the public. Even staying at home on election night and taking screenshots of results as they are reported by the media or by county websites may ultimately prove helpful in revealing anomalies or concerns that need further investigation to make sure that the vote counts are, in fact, accurate as per voter intent. I've asked folks to be present at polling places when they close, to take photos or videos of so-called poll tapes as they are printed out by the voting and tabulation systems. Most of these processes are still open to the public. And with everything now, everybody now having a video camera in their pocket, yeah, you can photograph or videotape those poll tapes, which may prove helpful later in either offering evidence later that results had mysteriously changed from the time they were first printed out at the polling place to the time they were finally certified, or that claims of fraud between the close of polls and certification are actually false, because you've got firsthand contemporaneous evidence of what those numbers actually were on election night. But while those processes, at least I believe, we'll ask my guest if I'm right about this, are almost as simple and sort of straightforward as I've explained them, the more you know about these processes and how you can help to oversee our elections, the better. And while there are a whole bunch of organizations out there supporting a particular party or politician, hoping to get them elected, there are not as many who are simply hoping to make sure that voters can vote and that results are not only tallied as cast, but are documented as such, as a hedge against either claims of fraud or actual fraud. The folks at the independent, nonprofit, nonpartisan scrutineers.org are one of those groups, helping folks like you to help oversee your own and, yes, my own elections. And they hold many events and training sessions to help folks like you, yes, you, do exactly that. Emily Levy is the founder and director of Scrutineers.org, the nonpartisan online community of people working to protect U.S. elections. She has been a leader in the election protection movement since, around 2004, participating in critical lawsuits, election investigations, training election observers over those years, as well as being an occasional colleague of mine at various times over the years, including as a guest blogger from time to time at bradblog.com. Emily kicked off scrutineers.org back in 2020 as an organization that you can join if you'd like to do more than simply vote and then sit around and wait for returns and hope for the best. If you or someone you know might want to do more this year to actually help protect and preserve democracy via much-needed public oversight of our elections, then, as the pharmaceutical companies like to say, scrutineers.org might be right for you. Emily Levy, it has been a while, but welcome back to the Bradcast.
Thank you so much. That was a fabulous introduction, and I'm thrilled to hear that the pharmaceutical companies are promoting
yes.
our work.
Yes, they are, apparently. Emily, it's been a minute or so since you joined us on the Bradcast. Even though Scrutineers has remained busy over the many years since we last talked, yes, even between major elections. But before we dig into some more specific details about what your group is doing, upcoming events, efforts, trainings, and so forth that people can participate in, first tell me about how and why Scrutineers came about and what your aims are, and frankly, whether my thinking about public oversight of our elections, as I just discussed, sort of syncs up with yours and Scrutineers.
It absolutely does. And when the 2020 election cycle began, I, having been involved for over 15 years at that point, mm-hmm. in this work, sort of took a step back and took a look at what needs to happen that other organizations don't seem to be doing. And I noticed several things. One was, even though at that point, because of the Mueller investigation in particular, people were newly concerned about what was referred to in that investigation as election security, mm-hmm. Very few people had any idea that there were things that they could do to make the elections more secure. And also, if they were interested and wanted to learn it, there wasn't really anywhere for people to go to learn things like what are the different kinds of voting systems and which ones are safer and which ones are more vulnerable, mm-hmm. and what is the history of evidence of manipulated elections and like all the kinds of stuff that you talk about in when you talk on your show and at mm-hmm. BradBlog about election transparency and election security. There just wasn't an education center where people could learn about mm-hmm. it. So that's something that I wanted to create. And then another thing was that I saw that there were these small organizations working on finding ways to make our elections more transparent when they're conducted using really non-transparent computer-based, software-based mm. systems mm-hmm. that had some pretty interesting, creative, and potentially really effective ways to provide public oversight. But those organizations tended to be made up of people who were from computer science backgrounds or statistical backgrounds and not organizers, not really people who knew how to build a movement or to have enough people know about these methods mm. to be able to use them. And at the same time, there was this huge voting rights movement that had a ton of volunteers registering voters, doing get out the vote, things like that. And their work basically ends when the polls yes. close election night.
Right.
And those two groups really needed each other. And nobody seemed to be working to make those connections. And so I really wanted to start a group that would focus on building bridges between the election transparency folks who had kind of more technical expertise mm-hmm. and the voting rights folks who had more people power.
Because to me, it's all the same thing. I mean, it's all well and good if you make sure that everybody can vote, but if their votes aren't counted accurately or we can't know that they're counted accurately, a lot of good that does. Same thing if we have results that are counted accurately, but people are suppressed and prevented from voting. It's all to me. That's why election integrity, that phrase, and election protection has always been, the best way to think about it as a sort of a holistic approach to make sure everything is fair and transparent and overseeable from beginning to end.
Yep, exactly.
There is this thinking, Emily, at least if you hear it from Democrats, though, that, you know, Republican efforts to work the polls and watch the polls is about intimidation more than anything. I don't know if that's the reason that some folks join these efforts, but as I mentioned in the opening, my experience over the years, you know, finds that people who work the polls as election officials or just, you know, watching the entire process actually come away with more confidence in the election system rather than less. Is that your thoughts on that based on your many years of experience?
Generally speaking, I think that's true. I think people have very little idea of what goes on at the tabulation centers, in election offices, just what all the processes are that make sure that that all the votes are counted once and only once, mm-hmm. that, you know, that nobody's alone with election materials, things like that, that until you actually see it, it's hard to imagine that there really are procedures in place that are doing their best to make sure everything happens in a orderly and accurate way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's been a sort of a strange bunch of years, I know, for folks like you and me in the election integrity and election protection, election security movement, whatever you want to call it, especially with, you know, many MAGA folks sort of co-opting some of those names for themselves, even while many of them are frankly using it, as I see it, to both lie about election integrity and make it harder, not easier, for folks to vote. Have you found that Trump's sort of false claims about fraud in our elections over recent years has made your work more difficult, or has it produced more people who are interested in assuring that results are accurate and elections are carried out fairly?
For the most part, I would say it's made it more difficult. My perception is that the MAGA folks have taken some of the good work that folks like you and me have done over the last 20 years, mixed it with a whole bunch of lies and put it out there and hammered on it for more than 4 years now. And that's been very frustrating when we try to talk now about concerns in any way about how our elections are run. People immediately think that we're MAGA, and nothing could be further from the truth. Mm. We're a nonpartisan organization. Scrutineers is a decidedly progressive organization. We're simply not associated with any party, and we don't advocate for or against any particular candidate. So, yeah, it's been really tricky. And I wish that I could say that as a result of the big lie about the 2020 election, we ended up with more transparent elections. I wish what had happened is that the Democratic Party had responded by saying, oh, you don't trust election results? Let's make our elections more transparent so everybody can know they're accurate. But that's not how they've responded, unfortunately.
Yeah, you know, there's been a lot of debate over the past week or so. I'm sure you're following it. After Georgia's now MAGA majority-controlled state election board instituted a new rule that mandates a hand count of the number of ballots at the close of polls at the precinct before ballots are then sealed up and sent to county headquarters. Now, thanks to a lot of really bad reporting on this matter from almost all of the major corporate media outlets, suggesting that this mandate was for hand count of results at the polls on election night rather than simply the number of ballots cast, a lot of folks were initially opposed to this new rule. But even after, Emily, it became clear that this was a matter of simply counting the number of ballots, not the results, but, you know, taking an inventory before shipping the ballots off. Nonetheless, Democrats in Georgia and elsewhere have still been up in arms about it, charging that it would delay the results in Georgia for days or weeks or months, providing a grounds for Team Trump to challenge the results in Georgia, et cetera. Do you or scrutineers have a position on that issue?
I am following the lead of the expert you had on about this last week, Marilyn Marks from Coalition for Good Governance, mm-hmm. who is a valued colleague, and she's on the ground in Georgia. She knows Georgia laws. She knows the people involved. And I see no reason to disagree with her that this is not something to be particularly concerned about, that we really actually need to know if the number of ballots matches the number of votes that have been recorded in a particular precinct. And in fact, when they don't match, it means that the poll workers need to go looking in some places where ballots sometimes get left in different mm-hmm. bins in the scanner, mm-hmm. things like that, to make sure that everything can be reconciled, or that if it can't be, that's documented. Yeah. And having worked as a poll worker myself, that was part of the process that we did. I'm in California, and yeah. my recollection is that's part of the process that we yes. did, was accounting for all the ballots that were issued to our precinct, which how many had been voted, how many had not been voted, how many had been spoiled, meaning someone started to vote, mm-hmm. made a mistake, and came and got a new ballot. It seems to me like it's common sense that this is a procedure that needs to happen.
It's something that has been done, as you note, for many years in California, Arizona, North Carolina, Illinois. For whatever reason, it hasn't been done in Georgia. Now, I do have, and I understand that Democrats are challenging this rule on the basis that it was they came up with it too late, you know, just before the election. And I think there's an argument there to be made that, oh, is this too late to be adding new rules? But the idea that we should have an inventory that, you know, is overseen, again, by the public, seems like a good idea to me. All right.
Yeah.
Emily Levy, scrutineers.org has a number of projects in place for the upcoming presidential elections that folks can participate in, including what you describe as your poll tapes project and what you call your after project. Let's step through those quickly so folks get a sense of what they may be able to participate in with you at Scrutineers. How they can do more than just vote or support their favorite candidate or candidates this year. Tell me about the poll tapes project.
So you mentioned in your introduction that one of the things that people can do to help provide public oversight for the elections and really to be part of the checks and balances that we have on our elections is to take photos, or we actually prefer video, of the poll tapes, which look like cash register receipts and which are printed out by the scanners that count votes mm-hmm. at the end of election night. Mm-hmm. The poll tape has on it, for every race, each candidate and how many votes they got. If there are questions or propositions on the ballot, it says how many yeses and how many no votes there were for each one at that precinct. And in many states, it's required that those poll tapes be posted visible to the public outside of the polling place mm-hmm. at the close of the election that night. So they'll post it, say, on a window of the building facing out. And it's perfectly legal to go take a look at those and to take video of them. Our partners at America Counts have actually created a mobile phone app that people can use to take these videos and upload them so that they can be collected with the others that people take all over the country, and the numbers on them can be compared to the official results that are produced later. And this is really important because, as I think you mentioned, if the official results and the numbers on the poll tapes don't match, it's actually the numbers on the poll tapes that are correct. So it's really important that we document these. Mm. And we're going to be doing a little training along with America Counts for folks who want to learn how to do this. And we'll also be talking about what to do if you live in a state where they're not posted, where the poll tapes are not posted publicly. There are some alternatives about how you can get access to them to take those videos. And there are also other parts that people can do, like help with the transcription of the numbers from the videos into spreadsheets and comparing the totals with the totals, the official totals that are announced later. So there are some at-home aspects, there's some at-home ways to participate, and there are some election night ways to participate. And this is especially a great thing, not only, but especially a great thing for people to do who are already going to be at a polling place when the polls close on election night, either because they're a poll worker or they're an observer, or even because they like to vote, or when they're available to vote is right at the end of the time that the polls are open. Mm-hmm. It does take a little while before they're posted, but if you're going to be there anyway, why not do this? And there's also the option to travel around to different polling places in your neighborhood or in your county, and take videos at more than one place, which is terrifically helpful.
And I think you guys have a poll tapes training session on October 16. Folks can go to scrutineers.org and find the dates on that. But I should note, you know, since you mentioned whenever you describe what it is you do, that people first assume you're, MAGA election deniers or something, that this process is, in one sense, it's as much about proving fair elections as it is about proving fraudulent elections. Is that fair to say?
Yes. I mean, I think that's one way that this may become really useful and important is if there are accusations, for example, of the central tabulator that tabulates the votes that come in from all the different polling places and drop boxes and vote by mail. If people claim that the central tabulator changed the vote counts, which is one of the claims that we've heard from MAGA in the past, mm-hmm. the way that you prove that that hasn't happened is showing that the numbers are the same on the poll tapes mm-hmm. and the numbers and coming out of the central tabulator.
And that may be part, the central tabulator may be part of the what you call the AFTER project. Tell me about that.
So our AFTER project stands for Act for Trusted Election Results. And in this project, what we do is encourage people to observe the processing and counting of votes. Now, as your listeners know better than most people in this country, the actual counting happens inside computers and can't be observed. Mm-hmm. But the processes around it and the output and what's done with the output can be observed. Mm-hmm. And in most places, you don't need any special authorization to observe these parts of the process. In some places, you do need permission from a candidate or party in your community. And at our training, we talk about what you'll be able to see when you observe, how to prepare to observe, how to check out what you need to do, you know, if you do need that special permission, how to get it, what kinds of things to look for, and then also what to do if you see something that doesn't seem quite right to you. One of the things that's a little tricky about being an observer the first time or two that you do it is sometimes you'll see things that seem completely fine and aren't, and sometimes you'll see things that seem like a problem but are actually completely fine and just the way things are done. And so we try to help people as much as we can distinguish between those things and know when something is a problem and who to call if uh-huh. issues come up. So we have a 1-hour training session we do with introductory information about all the things that I just said. Our next one is coming up October 20th, mm-hmm. which is a Sunday. And again, just like with the other event and all our events, they're all listed at scrutineers.org. You'll see them right on the homepage.
The one session coming up, When Voting Isn't Enough, What the Current Risk to Democracy Calls Each of Us to Do. That sounds interesting. But yes, you can go to scrutineers.org and see dates for poll tape training, observer training, and even training for poll workers on how they can use their role as poll workers to actually protect the election. So check that out at scrutineers.org. Emily, I know that participation in all of this is on a volunteer level, though I do know you take donations to stay up and running at scrutineers.org. But also there's no cost, as I understand, to participate, though. As I recall, last time we spoke, there was actually a fee of $1 or something that you used to essentially to keep trolls out of the process. Is that still?
Yeah. So basically, the trainings that we've mentioned today, the events that we've mentioned today are all free and open to the public. And we also invite people to become members of the Scrutineers community, which gives them access to our interactive website where we have conversations with each other. We share share our experiences. We have a weekly community gathering. All of this is online. Everything that we do mm-hmm. is virtual. And we do have a one-time fee of $1.99 to become a member. And that's basically to keep bots and trolls off the site. It doesn't support our work by any stretch of the imagination.
And you're not going to sell that information to Big Pharma, which obviously supports your work, as we discussed at the top of the
No, that's a one-way relationship. We don't offer them a lot of support, but we accept any support they'd like to offer us.
Very
tongue firmly in cheek.
Very good. Bradcast recommended, frankly, over at scrutineers.org. You can also find them on the Twitters at ScrutineersUS. Emily Levy is the founder and director of scrutineers.org, a longtime friend and colleague of mine, and frankly, a champion of democracy. Emily, good luck this year. Stay in touch. I suspect you will. We may be talking to you again between now and the election, and then in the days and weeks after, in what I call phase two of the election. So thank you for all you're doing, and please stay in touch.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. Okay, Desiree, you're looking at me like
yeah,
you have something
I just
to say.
Wanted to underscore that yes. Scrutineers is a really neat little community of really awesome people. It's nonpartisan, not political. So, you know, if you're searching for a community where you can both do some good and help ensure transparency in our elections, then that's a great community to sign up
and,
with.
And, you know, in between elections, I mentioned they continue to do work.
Yeah.
A couple of years ago, they were having movie nights, and they screened one of the movies that I'm in, one of the documentaries called Murder, Spies, and Voting Lies, about a story that I broke some
many years ago
at bradblog.com, a guy named Clint Curtis. And they showed the movie, and then I was there afterwards answering questions. And cool
so
people.
It was very cool, fun yeah. little group. And yes, you should see that film anyway, even though Brad is in it. So
yes,
you
it's know. Still good. If you'd like to see a very young and skinny Brad Friedman, you can check that out. I think the movie's still available for purchase, or
yeah.
maybe for free on YouTube. But,
or maybe Emily will have another.
VotingLies.com if you'd like to get more information
and
on that.
And maybe Emily will have another movie night on that.
But
too.
Go to scrutineers.org and help us save our democracy, please. Thank you in advance. All right, let's take a quick break, and we will come back with a... some of the grim news out of the U.S. Southeast in our latest Green News Report. That is straight ahead on the Bradcast. I'm Brad Friedman. Hey, this is Brad. Here at the Bradcast and bradblog.com, we fight for election integrity all year around, like no other media outlet in the nation. But of course, we need your help to do it. Please stop by bradblog.com/donate to make an automated monthly pledge of any amount you like, or even just a one-time only contribution to help us remain on your public airwaves and completely independent. The fight for voting rights, civil rights, and to save our planet continues. Please help us continue that fight independently over your public airwaves by stopping by bradblog.com/donate right now. Go ahead, do it right now. From Desi Doyen and myself, thank you.
You're listening to an encore presentation of the Bradcast.
Just breaking from CNN this afternoon, Hurricane Helene, now the second deadliest mainland U.S. hurricane in the past 50 years. Mm. Only Hurricane Katrina killed more people. Desperate search and rescues are still underway down there. So it's particularly aggravating and maddening to hear this jerk, I think this was in Georgia on Monday.
Yes, it was.
Say something like this.
The devastation wrought by this storm is incredible. It's so extensive. Nobody thought this would be happening.
Yeah, well, you know what, Donald Trump? Everyone thought this would be happening, at least everyone who's not a liar and working for the fossil fuel industry, who has, tried to warn about all of this for so long, while folks like Donald Trump were doing nothing about it and calling climate change a hoax. But let me not get ahead of myself as we discuss in our latest Green News Report.
This is an unprecedented tragedy that requires an unprecedented response.
Green News Report special coverage. Climate change-fueled Hurricane Helene delivers widespread death and destruction across the southeastern U.S.
We're not leaving until the job is done.
As survivors face the daunting challenge of recovery.
From BradBlog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
So you're right. Something is, who knows what the reason is, but something is changing. Massive storm surge. So we've got to figure this out.
Oh, I know what the reason is. I know what's changing, Florida Senator Rick Scott. We figured it out decades ago, even if you are still pretending that your fossil fuel industry donors aren't causing it. It's climate change, Rick Scott. Ready to stop killing your own constituents yet? This is your Green News Report.
I'm gonna soak up the sun.
Okay, Desi Doyen, I guess I had a little bit of a rant there.
Yes.
But I think it's appropriate right now. What do you got for us today?
Well, as we go to air, the multi-state, multi-billion dollar disaster of Hurricane Helene has killed at least 130 people, inundating communities from Florida to North Carolina, destroying towns and knocking out power to millions across the southeastern U.S. President Biden approved federal disaster declarations for Florida, Georgia, North Carolina, South Carolina, Alabama, Tennessee, and Virginia. Helene was fueled by record-hot Gulf of Mexico waters, rapidly intensifying from a Category 1 to a dangerous Category 4 storm in a single day. The strongest hurricane on record to make landfall in the Big Bend region of Florida, the same area hit in August by Hurricane Debby and Idalia a year ago. Helene delivered record storm surge to western Florida. Longtime residents told local news that they were surprised by the severity of the storm surge and regretted not evacuating. But Helene's most devastating impact struck inland. Emergency responders and FEMA are airlifting food, water, medicine, and supplies to isolated, flood-stricken rural areas. The storm dumped as much as 29 inches of rain on already saturated ground. The raging floodwater swept away homes, roads, bridges, and grid infrastructure and completely cut off entire towns in parts of western North Carolina and eastern Tennessee. Preliminary estimates of Hurricane Helene's damage top $110 billion, the majority of which won't be covered by insurance. Insurance industry experts warn the storm is likely to have a significant impact on the private insurance industry, homeowners, and the federal flood insurance program. And yes, climate change supercharged multiple aspects of Helene's historic destruction, scientists say. Storms now undergo rapid intensification like Helene, far more often than in the past, fueled by record warm oceans. The warming climate is causing storms to produce more intense rainfall than back in the 1980s, increasing flood impacts. Rising sea levels amplify storm surge. More storms now reach major status of Category 3, 4, or 5 far more often than in the past. Helene is the eighth Category 4 or 5 hurricane to make landfall in the U.S. in the last 8 years, and that's as many major storms as hit the U.S. in the previous 60 years.
Wow, and who could have predicted all of this?
Well, one person who did was climate scientist Dr. Michael Mann. Here he is on CNN.
The science here is pretty rock solid. The reason we're seeing these more intense, more extreme storms is because of how much we've warmed up the planet, how much we've warmed up the oceans. And that warmth is sort of baked in.
Republican presidential nominee Donald Trump used a campaign trip to a damaged town in Georgia on Monday to repeat his denial of climate science and baselessly accused Democrats of withholding relief from, quote, Republican areas.
Oh, you mean like Donald Trump actually did to Democratic governors when he was president?
Yes, we'll get to that in a moment.
Mr. President, Donald Trump has accused both of you of ignoring the disaster.
He is lying. Let me get this straight. He's lying. I don't know why he does this.
He does this because he's Donald Trump and he's a liar.
And President Biden and Georgia's Republican Governor Brian Kemp debunked Trump's false attacks on the federal government's response. As president, Trump delayed hurricane disaster aid for Puerto Rico and denied 99% of aid requested by North Carolina's Democratic governor after Hurricane Matthew and diverted money away from FEMA. Project 2025, backed by Trump's supporters, would limit FEMA disaster aid to states and downsize and privatize the National Weather Service. Congressional Republicans touted disaster aid but voted to shut down the government just 2 days before Helene struck.
For much more on all of these stories, and especially the ones we couldn't get to today, check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
I just want to see the love in your eyes after the storm has passed you and gone.
Thank you very much, Desi Doyen.
Yes, they have a long, long, long road ahead of them.
And just since our Green News Report this morning, the death toll continues to rise now. At least 160 people have died across six states. According to CNN, and officials fear the death toll could continue to rise following Helene. Many more remain missing, perhaps unable to leave their location or unable to contact family where communications infrastructure is still in shreds. So we will continue to follow that grim story as it unfolds in the coming days and weeks. I want to thank my guest today, Emily Levy of Scrutineers.org, my producer every day, Desi Doyen. Thank you so much. And thank all of you for spending a portion of your day or night with us. If you missed any portion of today's show, or you just want to go give it a listen again, or you want to share it with friends, family, neighbors, and enemies.
Especially people who are interested in working their elections to make sure that they are protected
and
defended.
There you go. We need poll watchers. We need poll workers. Please be one of them.
Because you can be there to help make sure that voters are protected.
If you'd like to download the show, as I was saying, you can go for free and grab it anytime and share it anytime at bradblog.com. That service is made possible by those very few of you who stop by bradblog.com/donate or just hit one of those donate buttons to help us stay on your public airwaves and try to continue the public service journalism that we try to do day in and day out on both the Bradcast and bradblog.com. Thank you in advance. Drop me email if you like. I'm bradcast@bradblog.com. On the Facebooks, Mastodons, and site still known as Twitter, you will find me at The Brad Blog. You will find Desi at
Green News Report.
I'm Brad Friedman. Good luck, world.
I just want to see the love in your eyes after the storm.